right, it's time for the Bite Me Fishing Show. Glad you could join us here on this Thursday. Man, it's been a wild week. Been a wild week of weather. May get even crazier. We're definitely going to get into that. But let's start right here because we're talking about it earlier off air. We'll start with the finicky bite that Caleb was talking about, but definitely want to get into some crazy stuff that's happened out on the water as well. So, Caleb, about the finicky bite.
They're just like the zombie mode. I flipped it one. At this point, I've got a gulp shrimp on a weedless jig head, and I flipped it one, and he swam under it and got the line on his back and then pulled the lure up on his back, and the lure just rode him for like 10 feet and just fell off.
Good fish gravy. Foul hook that sucker.
But so I checked the rules against him. Yeah. I needed a pulley from Swamp People with the cotton rope and a treble hook because, I could have got some good ones that way. But the thing, and you know, Scott will tell you this too, the thing you look for whenever you're in that kind of bite is if you can find a group of five or six, then you can get that I'm going to get it before you do bite, right? Yeah. They start getting competitive with each other, whether they really want it or not. We couldn't even get bites out of those. It'd be mm-hmm. groups of five or six. And it's just tis the season. And don't forget, we're on the backside of a full moon right now, too. The full moon
was
on Wednesday night. And so on the backside of a full moon, we should be coming off of it here shortly. But these last several days, you're on the backside of a full moon. It's super hot. The water's calm. The steel. It's just you just gotta eat it and go on to the next day.
Well, speaking of eating it, we're gonna have a boat ramp confessional right now, and you guys were telling your stories. So here's the boat ramp confessional from Vincent. He said we could feel free to use his name. It was just funny. It's like, basically, the headline is "I'm running out of rods." So Vincent was on his boat. Says I was pushing off the dock, lost my balance, of course, and went to step off, kicked one of his rods and snapped it clean in two. So, he's down one there. Gets to one of his spots to fish, and he grabbed his paddle for some reason and knocked another one of his rods into the water, and so it sank. And then I think something happened to another rod, but he said, luckily I had my waders on. So I jumped in and he's fishing around on the bottom of what I'm guessing was not the clearest of water to find his rod. So he sank to his knees in the mud. And then he kind of, the water came up on him. So he was wearing his PFD and poof, it popped open when he's trying to find his rod. So now he can't reach down to get his rod because his PFD opened. So I guess he was kicking around or whatever and ended up finding the rod. At least a good part of this, he ended up catching, he said, a couple of limits of fish. But that to me reminded me, first of all, he lost two rods, maybe a third, and his PFD went off when he was trying to find it. Those are the boat ramp confessional stories that I love because it has a happy ending. It's funny. It happens to all of us. We all set our egos aside on this one. So it reminded me, I was fishing with Captain Mickey. It's been probably 4 or 5 years ago now in Galveston. And we were actually, catching some fish. So I'm changing stuff up and we're moving spots to these different areas where he is. And I set my rod on the back, kind of like leaning against the seat there. And I walked to the front to get a drink of water or something. And he's just puttering. Like he's trying to find these fish, move on to the next spot or whatever. And I turn around to grab my rod and it's gone. And I just looked to the right, looked to the left. I looked in the rod holders and we were going 5 miles an hour. To this day, I have no idea, but my rod fell in the water off the back of the boat and it traveled about 5 or 6 feet. Like I leaned it, on the leaning post. The next thing I know, I go get a drink of water. It's gone. So someone either threw it in the water for me to get back at me for some reason, or it just somehow slid over the back of his boat gradually and into the water. And I'm like, oh, Mickey, I don't know how to tell you this, but one of my rods, I think, went off the back of the boat. And Mickey, being the great dude that he is, he's like, wait, what? Everybody reel in. So he turns the trolling motor, turns the boat, and he gets everybody to start casting at the water with their lead head, their jig heads. And he goes, just reel it real slow. We'll find that rod. And I'll be dang. Captain Mickey hooked my rod, reeled it off up to the back of the boat. And I grabbed my rod. I've heard of people trying to do that, but never successfully. So he caught my rod after it fell off the back of the boat.
Probably the most incredible story that I have. It just happened recently. Our buddy Chuck McKinney lost two rods out of his boat in Louisiana coming back into weigh-in. He was running so late, he couldn't even stop to go get them. And then went back recently, like 3 weeks later, and found both of them underwater.
Wow. So he didn't mark it, I guess. He must have marked it.
Chuck's one of them old guys that he just smart or something. Because he said, I knew where they flew out, and I knew where, you know. So, all right, cool. I had a fish. So the day two of that tournament, we caught three fish all day long. And it was a group of five. I got one to eat. And whenever I got mine to eat, then they did that reaction thing, and Daniel had one eat. So we're double hooked up. My fish was only like 6 pounds. And so I boat flip him in the boat. Daniel had one that ended up being 9 and just a hair over. But in my eyes, that was the fish we wanted. So I throw my redfish. My redfish is boat flipped. He's laying in the middle of the boat. I throw my rod down dead center in the middle of the boat. And I'm trying to net Daniel's fish, and something keeps getting in my way. And I realize it's my rod. And the fish in the middle of the boat had field gold, my rod and reel, completely out in the water beside us, which I thought that was pretty fantastic. I mean, it kicked it hard to get it over the edge of that boat and into the water.
See, guys, even the pros.
I need to check that reel, I think.
Do boat ramp confessional stuff. Scott, you got a rod? Have you ever scooped one out? I've heard people just throwing like a weight or something or a big hook and trying to get it. I've never seen it successfully happen, but sure enough, Captain Mickey did.
Now, well, back to tournament fishing, Benny was on the bow and I'm poling, and I said, hey, got a redfish moving left or right up there. He's getting away from us. You know, you load up, make a good cast. You know, he's getting on out there. He said, wait. And it was going to be a long cast. Mm-hmm. Well, for whatever reason, Benny hauls off and throws rod, reel, and everything at the fish. I mean, the whole entire rig went sailing. It looked like he had thrown a javelin. And the damn thing just sailing.
You said cast.
I was like, what the hell, man? That was when we were both Shimano reps at the time, and the new Kamara had just come out. It was the lightest weight thing going, and we had those little bitty 50 MGs that we were fishing back then, and that damn thing was floating, and we were able to go over there and pick it back up.
A guy that – I'm not going to name names here, but a guy that I fish tournaments with, he's listening, and I promise you he's gritting his teeth right now and saying, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And
do it, go ahead.
I've thought to myself about 5 times. I'm not going to do it. But by golly, I can't help myself. I'm just a menace, and there's a red button in front of me.
Again, set your ego aside. It's the Bite Me podcast.
Oh, boy. I mean, you said even the pros do it. So let's talk about, I'm not going to name names, but man, I'm putting the boat on the trailer, and the ramp is steep. This is a steep one, Jack. And the guy, I'm not going to name his name, is backed in the water.
You don't have to anymore.
And the trailer's in the water, and I slide the boat up on it. And typically when we pull the boat out, we don't latch it. We'll just pull it out and latch it up in the parking lot. But this is so steep that we decide we should latch it. And old boy jumps out of the truck to come latch it, and here comes the truck, Jack. And this is the two-holer boat ramp, and the guy beside me goes, and when he does that, I click to what's happening. I start, man, my life flashed before my eyes. It's a long walk back to Texas, y'all. And he said he put the truck in park, and then when he got out, he had slapped the shifter and threw it back in reverse. And man, this thing, he the tailpipe was almost in the water when he got back in. And
he was scrambling.
Now that I'm saying good things about Daniel, man, he was like a cat getting back in that truck.
That's what I'm saying. Just scrambling
and got her stopped. But holy smokes, man. It didn't register what was happening because, you know, I put the boat in the trailer. Now I'm looking at the GPS, turning it off, you know, trimming the motor, all the stuff you do. And all I notice is I'm getting launched off of the trailer, like the goalposts are pushing the boat back in the water. And I look up and I just see a truck coming, and I see Daniel. I mean, I'm not going to say name names. He's flying back in the truck, and he got his stop, but holy smokes, man. Yeah. My heart stopped. It was an instance. We call it an instance.
Oh my gosh.
Instance.
Well, things happened to Dean too.
Yeah.
Dean and I are getting ready to go fish a kayak tournament. I was staying at his house down in Aransas, and we had everything loaded in the back of the truck. And Dean's always big on the milk crates in the back of the vehicle, you know, back of his truck. He's got rods in there. Everything's all in it. We hook them on down there. We get to the launch. We throw their kayaks out, and he reaches back there and grabs his milk crate, and he goes, "Didn't I put my rods in here?" I said, "Yeah, I remember you putting your rods in there." And he goes, "They ain't here." He's looking around. He's looking in the bed of the truck. "You know, Dean, they ain't here." I said, "Well, I don't know where the hell they're at." So we leave kayaks sitting there on the sand, mm-hmm. and just jump back in the truck, and we take off, and we trace ourselves back all the way through Aransas Pass looking for them. And we can't find them. They're not on the road anywhere. He's saying, "Man, how would they all blow off at the same time? You know, that just don't make any sense." So I don't know, a gust of wind or something. Hey, that was bad luck. Let's go back to the house and get you some more rods. He's got plenty of rods, you know. Let's mm-hmm. go back and get some more. We pull back in the driveway, and they're hanging from the oak tree.
He skimmed them.
And they were all of his rods are hanging just like Christmas ornaments from the oak tree. It was awesome.
That's a good idea.
Hey, man. Hey, man, there they are.
There they are.
I mean, they were there. He wasn't wrong. All right, coming up, going to be a big weekend to talk lures. Lucky enough to have the chance to talk with a couple of legends in the game. Let's start with Mark Nichols from DOA Lures. That's next right here on Sports Radio. Lures. All right, so Mark, let's get into it here, and I'm just going to kind of lead the way, and then Scott, I know, has a lot to talk about, stories and such, but DOA, of course, just a monster of a company and a fantastic company as well. I'm going to start with the lures themselves, specifically shrimp. We talk about it a lot on this podcast, DOA shrimp. Dean said he's made a living with them, and of course, Scott is quite familiar. I'm quite familiar. But that's where it all started. For those who may not know, you know, your background and all your experience and catching fish, et cetera, just give us the little thumbnail quick sketch of how this all started.
Dad had a shrimp boat in Galveston Bay, so I saw a lot of shrimp. Tended to eat more shrimp. Actually, a lot of it was kind of a synthesis of a bunch of things, but it's always kind of fascinated about making artificial lures. I played with them for a long time, doing as in my teens. And as time went on and my experience got better and I was around plenty of shrimp, we had to sell half our shrimp live in Galveston Bay. And that was in the 60s. And we had a bait shrimp license. And so so we take them in, but we also had a tank where we'd store them till I took them in. And so I watched them dive and swim around a good bit. But I also had gone to Colorado. And I really learned finesse fishing and dropping a fly and watching it drift down in the current. And I really got a feel for currents a lot more. I mean, I loved a canoe and that sort of thing, so I knew currents in that respect. But learning how to fish them effectively, then I moved over here to Florida. And, you know, by way of girlfriend, ended up over here. Parents had a condo, so I ended up over here. And I, you know, started fishing and, you know, one day when I first moved here, I went and bought some live shrimp, went over to a mosquito bridge over at Jensen Beach Causeway and threw out a shrimp wanting to catch a nice trout. And first cast, about a 40-pound tarpon comes out of the water, and I realized I wasn't in Missouri no more. The diversity of fish here at the time when I first moved here in the 80s was amazing. I'm pretty disgusted in the state as far as what they haven't done with their natural resource that they have. That's incredible that they just let the chemical industry tell them what to do. Because of that, you know, my phrase these days, like for anybody I talk to, is watch what's upstream, what they're doing upstream, because you're going to get it. And, you know, it sure destroyed what I thought was one of the best fisheries I'd ever been in. And so now I bring it back to full circle, talking about current. You know, I moved here, and then all of a sudden you're dealing with we have two high tides, two low tides a day, so we got pretty good moving water. So anytime you're fishing around your passes and inlets, you're going to deal with similar stuff. And so at that point, I developed that shrimp because I could let it sweep in a current really well. or I could wade with it and fish it very slow and meticulously without having to work it so fast because it was relatively light. And at the time, I was using relatively light spinning gear.
Well, one of the things people don't get on that shrimp is the way to fish it, being able to just swim it back. A lot of people want to hop it around and make it dance and do all this stuff. And you told me that way, way back when we first met, that you need to let it just ease along.
Well, you know, when it gets around down to it, the KISS theory of fishing, you know, where you can say, oh, well, that's a stupid way to fish. But when you look at a couple of the biggest redfish tours, there were one with a stupid popping cork with a plastic shrimp under it. And it, you know, kind of, you know, always use that to try to tell people, look, you made a noise. It drew the fish to the noise. He sees something and you didn't freaking move it so fast. He never had a chance to eat it. You're doing the same thing if you're not using it, but you're having to slow-mo down a lot. And secondly, your drop rate is so slow because of the weight being in the center, you think it's already dropped down 4 feet when really it's 2 feet down. A lot of times you're starting to work it when it's out of the zone where you really want it to be.
Right. So just let it go. I mean, that's what a lot of our listeners are going to get out of that. Let me ask you this, just out of curiosity. I mean, obviously we all know you live this stuff. I mean, you are on the water all the time. You know, last time I talked to you, after we talked, you said, yeah, I'm going to go out down to the whatever, the canal or whatever's behind you, the inlet, and see if I can go find something with the snook or whatever. I mean, you are always, you know, on the water, always fishing, always thinking about the next fish. That said, are you a little surprised, like, how big and successful this company has become? And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, it's just blown up.
You know, as far as that goes, when I started the company, I did a couple of things. I asked myself, what would I want if I was an employee? Because I was an employee a lot more than I was a boss in my life. And so first thing, 4 day weeks, you know, like people. And the other is truly give them a bonus if they work hard, and people appreciate that. And so I went with that basic philosophy. And and I love to fish, and I got, you know, a good bit of press, you know, as they call it, social media in this world. And I caught a lot of fish. I lived in a great place to catch fish, and I took advantage of it because I love to do it. So I was going to be there anyway. Might as well take somebody with me. I was really proud of, you know, for quite a long time where I brought folks from really good anglers from Texas, really good anglers from Louisiana and other states that it caught, you know, their personal biggest trout. And then I've had people waiting where they hooked a fish and I'm going, you got a big trout. And they're arguing with me because they're swearing it has to be a redfish or a snook. And then you finally, when they were 10 feet from the fish and you hear this, holy, you know what? And unfortunately, because of herbicides and stuff, that's really just done a real number on this fishery. But I mean, I'm a huge believer that nature can come back very quickly if we leave it alone. You know, I've seen some really healthy grass growing recently. I'm starting to catch pinfish and that sort of thing, which means they've got cover, which is really good news. You know, and we're fortunate here that we've got some pretty serious grown-up snook that live here. And we got a good healthy population of some mid-sized snook in the backyard. It's right back over there. That's a nice little creek, and I used to catch probably 10 times more juveniles than I do now. Water quality has definitely changed. They did what was going to be a great thing, which was they built a little retention pond up above it. But it turns out it's a nice little dog park where they throw their little things out for the retrievers. And so they put herbicide in it. So they kill everything in the pond, and it comes in there. Freaking creek. So it has not helped our fishery by them, quote, cleaning it up. It's a government thing, I guess.
You've got grass coming back now? Because when I was there, we didn't see a stitch of grass.
Yeah, actually, you know, I've seen some grass that, you know, some of it's stained with strands, but, you know, it's a foot long. So I'm seeing some, you know, it, like I say, if we don't get some major league dumps, you know, then we're going to be happy. And you know, when this all this mess started happening, which has been, you know, 10, 12 years, but considering that I was waiting here since 1980, I saw it go down in really, really a hurry. Furthermore, you know, we'd be fishing spillways in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s where there'd be foam that'd be 2 feet high, and you could smell the fertilizer, but there wasn't any herbicide in it, and the grass was, everything was happy, we were catching fish.
The legendary place is Indian River, right. And I'm guessing Indian River is one of the ones that you're talking about. What is the status of that?
Well, that's where I live. You know, I was a real maniac on trying to get a world record on two for a while and that sort of thing, but I'd caught so many really beautiful big fish over 30 inches. And, you know, the good news was most people around here, you know, me being raised in Texas eating fried trout, it was like, you know, a way of life. I still eat some, but, when I started catching those really big fish, you know, that's the last thing in your mind is ever killing one of those. And started seeing so many consistent big fish that, you know, my biggest was, you know, 34 and a quarter inches. I had a Taylor's measuring tape with me. I was like a half mile from my boat. I wasn't about to drag it around that far. You know, it was somewhere around 12 pounds or more. I don't know. But it was just big.
12-pound, 34-inch trout. I think most of us would take that, Scott.
Yeah. Well, that fish was less than a half mile from where the All Tackle World Record fish was caught in Florida and Fort Pierce. It's a very healthy fishery, and Fort Pierce has a good inlet. Therefore, it's got really good tide flow. It's got some good deep water. Our inlet is not a natural inlet. It always wants to fill up with sand, but it still has a fairly decent tide flow. And there's some very good brackish water, which the brackish water can grow some of the biggest, fattest, heavy girth snook. I think a fish gets around 40 inches up there and he's laying around a dock and he's eating a 2 pound mullet and he's going belching and farting. They don't fight worth a darn, you know, just because they're slobs. And they got a bad heart, you know, if they went to the doctor, cholesterol's high, 75-yard run, and they fall over dead. We literally have had them call them heart attack fish twice. Tried to eat one, it was the grossest thing we ever tried to eat. Then all of a sudden, you're thinking of a fish that might be, you know, 18, 19 years old, you know, that's been living up in that brackish water all that time. I don't want that. My theory is, you know, eat the bottom side of the slot.
Back on the lure side of things, you did the shrimp. What was the next one? What was your next?
Baitbuster.
The baitbuster? Okay. I thought so.
Mm-hmm. Baitbuster came as an evolution because I fished with a buddy of mine all the time. I fished nights a lot. And I was catching fish, catching snook really well on the shrimp, fishing around structure at night, fishing shadow lines and that sort of thing. And many times, you know, as far as educating goes, it was stalling it at a tide. You could sit there and it literally sit neutral in a tide, say 2 feet subsurface. Leave it right on that edge and the fish just after a few minutes, something's going to eat it. They can't stand it. So right. We're very successful doing that. And then somebody on one fall day decided it was mullet run time. And they weren't wanting to eat my shrimp for a little bit there. They were wanting to eat mullet. And so literally I went to my shop that night. And I carved a really, looked like everybody said it was way too phallic to try to sell. I caught that and caught a couple of snook the very next night, you know. And so I said, you know, I got something, and it was something that would ultimately hold in a current. And I ended up designing the shallow running bait buster would be a virtually identical design as the shrimp. It's got a lead in the belly, therefore it's not going to be a head first drop. It's going to be more of a belly gliding type of drop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I can lift it, make that tail wiggle a little bit, and then let it fall. That bait is, it's written in the Wall Street Journal as the ugliest bait the writer had ever seen and the best tarpon and striper bait he'd ever thrown.
Yeah, it can look however it wants.
I wasn't going to argue a bit.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about it next, right here on the Bite Me Fishing Show on Sports Radio 610. Welcome back. If you have not subscribed to the Bite Me podcast or YouTube channel, now is the time to do it. So much content, of course, and you can go back and listen or watch. Just search Bite Me on any podcast platform, but especially Podbean or Sports Radio 610, sportsradio610.com, and, of course, YouTube. Okay, so chatting with Mark Nichols from DOA Lures here. And, Scott, I know what your go-to is for tarpon especially.
Well, you know that's my go-to, you know, for my tarpon here on the beachfront. That's pretty much all I throw at them anymore.
So many folks, especially if I get folks from Texas and that sort of thing, and a lot of them here too, if they're used to fishing for trout and that sort of thing, they want to jig things a lot more, and tarpon don't like it jigged. They just, the simpler I keep it, the better it works.
Now, when you're designing these things, and you have, is it, last I saw, 27 different lures, something like that, or maybe more now, I don't know. But do you just sketch it? Is it in your mind? Do you mold it? How do you come about? I heard that the first DOA shrimp was made out of wood.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them are made out of wood and epoxy. Mm-hmm. Wood, epoxy, metal, whatever it seems to take. It's very interesting, you know, like we could talk for like, all right, this is going to be a 45-hour podcast. It's interesting that I've met a young man that's a super nice young man, and his whole world is he designs 3D printers, so he ain't stupid. And sharpest little young kid in the world, I really appreciate being around him. And he comes to my back porch over here and looks at something I've been whittling on, and he'll say, you know, how long did it take you to make that? And I'll say, you know, I come back and forth working on it, but I've got maybe 4.5-5 hours. And he'd look at it and go, "Yeah, that's pretty competitive. I couldn't do much better." But then he'd look at another part and I'd say, you know, that one's a pain in the ass. I can do that in an hour. Fascinating, you know, working with the new technology, things that you can do, you know, with the mold, with 3D printers and that sort of thing. And as they come up with different products that they can 3D print with, that's going to be an interesting world, evolution of, you know, everything, including fishing.
People don't realize, you know, they know you for the shrimp, but I've run into so many people that have no idea you've got paddle tails, you've got rat tails.
The Terrorize is one of our sleeper best baits I make. And, you know, and it's also interesting that there's certain things that, I'll just say, let's pick the tough guy. It's an artificial pinfish I make. Mm-hmm. Nobody recognizes them except for the Christmas Islands and a couple other islands around the Christmas Islands. And they buy about 20,000 or 30,000 a year.
That means something.
Yeah, why is this happening? And, you know, finally we're asking them, you know, the first day Christmas Island ordered like 5,000. And we're like, you know, what are you doing? And they're like, we catch yellowfin tuna with them. It's shape of a butterfish, big, deep buoys and stuff. And they're vertical jigging and catching all these fish with them. Send us pictures of a giant yellowfin where they'll nose hook a big circle hook in it and a big weight in front of it and jig. Go, okay, I would have never thought of that one, you know. And honestly, I think that bait is one of my sleeper baits that I haven't fished with enough, because I do believe that I've watched a commercial guy fishing off one of our bridges one night, and I was throwing Terrorize, consistently catching snook. And that there's guy on the other side of the bridge who I found out was throwing a tough guy, and his fish were 4 to 6 inches bigger than mine every time.
Hmm.
Catching them, and I was like, I went over and I was like, what are you doing? And aside from poaching, where I watched him throw a few snook in a buddy's truck, I found out that he was throwing the tough guy, and he said it's a perfect shape of a bunker. Fishing around some bridge pilings, and the bunker were piled up in there, and he was crushing them. And he was doing similar things where he was casting it just 3/4 down tide, where it would kind of sweep across the bottom of the lower part of the tide, so it would keep it elevated somewhat. And I watched him catch a couple fish just, you know, boom, boom.
Yeah. So,
you know, that is to say that I am always learning about my baits, really. You know?
Yeah. So what is a Terrorize for then, when someone asks you that?
I've caught gigantic snook on it. I've had, you know, within the last, say, 45 days, I've probably had 15 tarpon over 100 pounds eat that bait. I've side casted them, but I've also, you know, I learned quite a long time ago, 25 years plus, down in the Keys, I can flag that bait in a ripping current, and that bait will sit neutral in that current. And from a fish's point of view, in a 4-knot current, if it's sitting neutral, it has to be swimming.
Be proud. That's what we were throwing today, and we put two tarpon in the air today on it.
Yeah, those tarpon are just cruising back and forth up and down that shadow line, and they come up and see it and just suck it in. And one thing about the Bait Buster and the Terrorize that, to me, give them a huge advantage over a lot of other soft plastics is that they're both laying in an empty gap. So you have full gap of the hook on the hook exposure on the strike. It's not buried in a piece of plastic. It's in a hollow place. Both the bait buster is in a hollow with the head insert shaped like a baseball bat, and the insert and the terrorize is a piece of quarter inch flat stock that's 16 inch thick that goes right down to that eyeballs. So both of those have complete hook exposure. And so I can hook a really big tarpon and it just has this perfect little lip hook in it. And, you know, I'm hooking them with, you know, with some 40 pound leader. And, you know, honestly, if I'm hooking a fish 80 plus pounds, I'm going to fight him for maybe 20 minutes and then I'm going to load up on top of that thing and hopefully let that little real small hook right out of his face and everybody's going to smile and go away happy.
Just get the eat.
The thing about it is it's hot as hell, number one, for both of us, the fish and myself. Two, I could get that fish to boat in another 20 minutes would have to be how long it takes to get that fish the last 20 feet. And you're really wearing on that fish when you start turning them back and forth. That really wears on them hard. If you go ahead, it's like a win-win deal to me.
You know, one thing that a lot of people may not know, like literally every bait that you've ever made, you don't even start to think about putting it in production until you've used it and you've caught fish with it. I'm curious, like you've had so much success, you know, how does that play out? Has there been any where you think, well, maybe this ain't it, and then all of a sudden you start catching fish and you realize it, or is it, you've had to adjust it? How does that play out?
So let's talk about it next right here on Sports Radio 610. Okay, we are back on the Bite Me Fishing Show with Captain Scott Null, Captain Dean Thomas, and Captain Caleb McCumber. We're joined by Mark Nichols from DOA Lures, and let's get into the design process.
He'll be working on baits. I've got some of them in my box right now that are lures he's working on, and he'll send them over to me and say, here, fish this. Tell me what you think. Tell me how it's moving in the water. Is it something that you think will work? He really wants the feedback. You know, he realizes he doesn't know it all. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's damn good at it, but he wants other people to input and let him know how things are going. The one I'm working with him on right now is a crab.
I guess it would be research and development. Like, you don't even start to think about putting it into production until you know it's going to catch fish. But have there ever been anywhere you're like, I don't know, and then all of a sudden you realize a little tweak or something gets it done?
You know, that stupid PT, the poodle turd, that I can't. Yeah, I can throw it a mile, then I can do what I wanted to do, but I started it a long, long time ago, and I get pissed off and walk away from it. Then you'd be working on something else, and you say, you know, I could apply that to that. And it kept getting shorter because of hookup percentage.
Yeah.
You know, I can get a little longer walk with it if I made it longer, but then all of a sudden my hookup percentage really goes down big time. You know, I like using that bait. You know, if I'm down in your neck of the woods and it's blowing and there's loose floating grass everywhere, I can still fish it very effectively. My biggest bass I've caught to date was throwing it right in the middle of lily pads. And I waded out there and grabbed the darn thing.
Well, I gotta tell you, you know, I had heard of it, but it wasn't until I was fishing with Scott a little over a year ago, I guess now. He had that and he threw it, and you know, he caught at least one, maybe a couple of redfish, whatever it was. And I'm like, let me see that thing. Let me see that. And now that I'm down in Aransas, all the grass, what you're talking about. Right. I mean, it's almost, I use either, you know, that or another little topwater, but it's almost exclusive when there's grass. It's a hell of a bait.
It casts a country mile too. Mm-hmm. Long way. I tell people, you know, I've got a lot of friends that are fishing structure or fishing a bank or fishing under docks with it. And I always tell them, throw it offshore first and see how far it goes before you throw it 20 feet into those mangroves right over there.
I can't tell you how many customers I've had, you know, tie that on and their first cast is 30 yards into the grass. I mean, it's way back there.
That goes and goes and goes.
Well, the good news is it comes back out.
I've got it out of amazing things before.
And it won't take anyone's eye out because the hook is embedded there.
Probably better than, definitely better than shrevels. That's for sure. Say, you know, I am glad that, you know, pretty much everything I've got with the exception of one bait has got a single hook upright. And it lets me get touch the bottom without snagging the bottom. Lets me hook fish clean without you or the fish getting extra holes in it. And, you know, to me, it's just an easy way to fish and a clean and simple. And you still get excellent hookup percentage.
Yeah. Are you still working on your crab?
Yeah, it actually, it looks pretty good, but I've also got, I think I told you about a fly that I've got a modified circle hook that goes in it, and it throws really good, and it catches fish on fly, but I've also caught some really good panfish, i.e. crappie, with it. It's at a mold builder's as we speak, as well as a guys that build our molds in Alabama. And the other bait is I've got a 6.5 swim bait. And really? I'm going to have a couple custom hooks made, jig head style of hooks. And I'm just interested in doing some stuff like that. I've made a couple parts, and I'm, it gets back to your question earlier, wasn't satisfied getting great strikes, but the hookup percentage sucks because the lead came up is interfering too much with the strike. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've got some longer shank hooks with deeper gaps to help compensate for that. So I'm working on, that's one of the projects I'm working on.
Man, the science and the experience here is what's fascinating to me, because if you weren't such a good fisherman, you wouldn't make as good a lure, and then you make a good lure and you become a better fisherman. So it's like, you know, it all goes together.
It's so never ending, you know. I love throwing my about 3/4 of my snake at a tailing redfish. You can wiggle it 2 inches and it wiggles like crazy. Not something you have to move fast, so you can do a really subtle presentation and get it right in their face where they like to eat and wiggle it a little bit. And I never designed it for that either. You know, I had guys in the Carolinas, what, the first time I ever actually exposed it, and this is in the wintertime, and I thought they were going to buy it for largemouth bass. And so I go there, and people start buying it, and all these guys were like, all of our redfish have brain worms in their belly right now. And we used it. I'll be darned if they didn't crunch it. You know, where we were shads and jerk baits and eating it, but half-assed compared to the snake. And we're doing it with a little weighted screw lock, so we're fishing it really weedless. We're throwing it over some oysters and stuff like that, and it was deadly. And so it gave me some confidence. So since then, you know, Ed Zayak that was with us, he sat there and had tried a bunch of stuff up in the panhandle. He said, well, I'm going to try this. And sure enough, that they crushed it. And I didn't think ever, you know, trout would be eating it, but I've caught some really nice trout with it too.
Yeah, the first time you brought it down here was when we were doing one of the media events in South Padre, and me and Lee Alvarez took it out there. I said, I'm just going to try it out. We were up there fishing near some docks and some bulkheads, and it was after that time. It was that time when it snowed in South Padre on us. And I was throwing it up against that bulkhead and banging it into it and letting it fall. And we were catching trout literally every cast. And it does. It looks like a dadgum. It was meant to look like a little snake to fish for bass, but it looks like a worm in salt water. It looks like a little eel or something.
We got guys that are fishing it for cobia, and they're dropping it down with heavy leads. And some of them are putting like 3 on one hook. Looks like an octopus. I mean, going everywhere on it. It's pretty cool looking. I dropped one in a pool that way, and it is alive.
You mentioned the pool. We've mentioned it on the podcast as well. You really want to know how bait works, do that. And you know, and that's one for sure with me. All right, so let's get into a little bit of story time here, because I know it might embarrass you a little bit, but you're a legendary fisherman. You know, all these more than 100 trout over 30 inches, and
I'm ready. I got a great one for you.
Let's not bury the lead. Hit it.
We can call this segment, I knew that.
Yeah, we've all been there. Let's get that story and more next from Captain Mark Nichols. But this is important to mention right here. The Bite Me Feeding Frenzy is scheduled for August 29th at the beautiful Fulton County Convention Center down there in the Fulton Rockport area. And it's time to get excited about everything that's going to be there. It's really time to RSVP for the event if you haven't already. Just get to the Bite Me group page on Facebook to do that. It's easy to join. Just be sure to hit the I agree button when you do join the group. More than 300 people have already RSVP'd for the Feeding Frenzy. You got to get in on it. Going to have lots of terrific food catered by the great chef Adam Gonzalez from Gabriella's in Rockport. Cash Bar, lots of events, and of course, incredible gear, hunting and fishing trips, all kinds of other cool stuff available at the raffle. Live auction, silent auction, heck, just giveaways in general. Don't miss it, man. And don't go anywhere. More from Mark Nichols next hour. Plus, we'll talk barbecue and smoke it up next on the Bite Me Fishing Show here on Sports Radio 610.